I'm glad that we're here. This has been a marathon retreat for everyone, but that's what retreats kind of are, where we get together for a set period of time, and we focus on whatever subject the retreat is on, and it happens to be on independent living and techniques and skills and learning about resources that are available to you. So today is our last day. Tomorrow we will have just 1 hour where we will get together between 1 and 2, and I hope that you will share some of your successes, things that you might have tried out. You've heard people speak this week, and maybe you've tried some of the suggestions that have been offered, or you may want to share some other things or ask questions, and that will be the time tomorrow in our wrap-up. There may be subjects that you wished we had covered that we didn't. We couldn't cover everything in the retreat due to time constraint and some other things, so we hope that it has been helpful to you, and we'll start off with today with Wayne as the lead instructor for Cane Travel.
Well, hello everyone again, and welcome to our final day, day 5 of our 2020 Seniors Retreat. Today we will be discussing different modes of travel, public travel, and transportation, means of transportation. And we have Jerry Neely with us today, Jerry will be doing double duty. He's been working with our Zoom platform for us, helping out there. But also, Jerry is an NOMC. He's been teaching Cane Travel for 10 years. Jerry also, like myself, is an alumni of Louisiana Tech. He has graduated from Louisiana Tech about 10 years ago also, and has a master's orientation mobility. He is currently an instructor for the Utah Division of Blind Services and the state of Utah. So without further ado, Jerry, please give us any other background information that you'd like to share with us and that. And thank you for being with us today and participating throughout the week.
Thank you, Wayne. I appreciate that introduction. It's funny, we hear in Zoom all the time, "Can you hear me?" I'm assuming that I've unmuted myself, and I'm going to do everything in my power not to have you hear my jaws, because it's hard to hear and talk at the same time. So I won't be keeping track of the time. It's my nature to constantly check the time. But it's great to be here today. It's been fun all week. I've learned a lot of different things. It's been fun to help out, and I definitely do have a passion for Cane Travel. That's been one of my Deja Powell, as many of you might know. She was my instructor back in 2009 when I decided to attend the Division for Services for the Blind program. They have a training and adjustment program. And I was in the middle of one of her classes one day, and about 6 weeks into the program, when I thought, man, I really want to – I don't know that I ever thought I could be a teacher. I didn't have enough confidence in myself. I've been blind all my life. Grew up in Florida, graduated from the Florida School for the Deaf and Blind. Used a folding cane. I have RP, and I enjoyed being able to learn. But I really didn't have a good attitude. I could see for 20 years, about the size of a quarter, and it was just not very good vision. And wearing glasses, people thought I could not stand. For those of you that have some vision, I hope if you like it, great. But I could not stand the partial world. I couldn't handle it. I needed designation. And when I was 20 years old, I had a pretty bad attitude and a chip on my shoulder. But I decided I'd rather be totally blind than partially sighted. And I took my glasses off while I could still see to be designated. And I don't know anyone else that has done that. For me, it was the right decision at 20. Both my brothers went blind in their early 30s, 10 years later, and they've seemed to be continuously struggling with it. But for me, I just needed designation. And it took me 20 years to find the NFB, and I kind of muddled through life. I certainly survived, and I was a fighter, but it took me a little while to get some good training. And so I was in this class and decided to go. Deja was my teacher, and she had told me about the Louisiana Tech program, and even though I was getting great mobility training, I wanted a higher level of training. And so I had to convince a lot of people in Utah to send me to Louisiana so I could get a master's degree to teach. And that's exactly what I did. 5 months later, I enrolled and It took me 9 months into the program to finally kind of get it. Derek was like, he was really worried. He didn't think I was ever going to be able to figure out that I could teach. But I had a lot of great experiences. It was a fun time. And mobility to me is like, there's only one other thing probably greater that will give you the confidence that you need to survive in this life. And that's efficacy. It was a term I learned in college, self-efficacy, being able to believe in your mind that you can do it, that you're worth it, that it's, cause I remember hiding most of my life from the world. I remember thinking that I was a broken sighted person, not a blind person. And you spend decades feeling like you're less than most people. It's hard to, get over that. You struggle with it every day. We all struggle. Those of you that are new to this, I don't think that because we've been dealing with this a long time and we got it all figured out, because we all have our demons. But we know that blindness is not what's holding us back. With good proper training and education, we can become what we want to become, and we can do not have to settle for customer service jobs anymore. Just about sky's the limit. And interestingly enough, that my topic today was modes of transportation, because anybody that's been to Ruston, Louisiana knows that your feet is the biggest mode of transportation. They don't really have a public transportation system. I think I hired a lot of people to take me around because I didn't want to walk everywhere, but travel class definitely provided opportunities for me to walk the city. You get to know the city pretty well when you're walking it. But in Salt Lake City, we have a train. We have one system called the Front Runner that goes from basically city to city. And then within the area of Salt Lake City, there's the Green Line, the Red Line, the Blue Line, and they take you to different parts of the city. And as a blind person, that can be a daunting task. When we tell people when they first start our program that we're going to do drop routes, for those of you that don't know, or you work a certain area for a while and then you drop a student off in a similar area and then they have to find their way back to the center without asking questions. Depending on how long they're out there, they could eventually ask a question. But for the most part, we don't do this on the first day, obviously. We could definitely give them a lot of chances to learn and practice and use their cues. And we spend probably a good week inside the building for the first part of their training, because we want them to be those cane skills. We want them not to be worrying about how to hold a cane and how to move it when they go outside to implement new variables. So at the blind center, there's a bus that comes right to the building. And then when they go about three blocks down, there's a train, the Green Line, and it goes to the airport's at about one stop to the west. And then, the Green Line kind of loops around the city. And then at the courthouse, it connects up with the Red Line, which goes up to the University of Utah and the Moran Eye Center. And then the Blue Line goes to the southern end of the city. So people, Utah Transit Authority, they have buses. It's interestingly enough, on Sundays, they don't run, the Front Runner doesn't run from city to city. They basically just don't run at all, which is really hard. So if you want to get to Salt Lake City on a Sunday, where I live, I'm 40 miles north. It takes 2 hours. It can take 2 hours. So Uber is used a lot. That's another mode of transportation. That's really nice. And Utah has a special program. I wish I could find a way to share it with the rest of the world, but we have a special grant that the other blind organization in the state manages. And, we basically can pay $60 and get a $200 voucher for Uber Cash. So it really makes that a very viable option. Transportation, one thing I wanted to mention too, this is not really a mode of transportation, but it was just another topic that I wanted to discuss, because I've noticed during the week that we all have different expectations about what blind people can and can't do. I would say for the most part, besides flying an airplane, because we've even driven cars before, there's just about nothing that blind people cannot do. So if you have sighted friends or family who say, well, we just don't expect you to do that because blind people can't do it, you should get your ire up a little bit and say, want to bet? And I can bet you I can find 10 people that can do it. So if you're in a restaurant, And this takes a little coordination, but you can totally carry a tray with a drink and on it with one hand and use your cane to find your location, find your, place to sit in a crowded place or in a not crowded place. It just takes practice. It just takes practice using lots of things at one time. It's not, you know, just like in the grocery store, pulling the cart, you know, and we try to train people to be able to do these things. It's a lot of trial and error. A lot of trial and error, and there's certainly absolutely nothing wrong with making mistakes. A mistake doesn't become permanent unless you refuse to fix it. So there's lots of different travel. There's a lot of different, like finding a lot of people that they really get scared when they're dealing with trying to find, like on this tracks line runs right in the middle of the street. So you have two lanes of traffic heading west outside the blind center. It's on a street called North Temple. Now, I know that sounds funny. We didn't talk a lot about this. I don't know. I grew up in Florida and I should have remembered this, but I didn't. I didn't really think about mobility until I was an adult. So I go back to my old neighborhoods in my mind and think about the addresses there. 9860 Southwest 140th Street. That was in downtown Miami, Florida. I don't know how you knew where 140th Street was. I feel like Utah has one of the best address systems. Once you're here for a while, I think, Wayne, I don't know if you lived here for a while or not, but it is the greatest. You have 100 east and 100 west, and you have 100 north and 100 south. Mm-hmm. You basically mm-hmm. build off that address system as you go north, south, east, and west. So if you, North Temple is basically like 100 north, it runs east and west. You just learn that pretty fast. You learn quickly, and you can figure out what side of the road addresses are on. You can totally understand where you can totally comprehend this address system. So the train, I apologize, I keep jumping around, but I just want to make sure I give you a good idea of this type of system out here. So the train basically is almost the width of two lanes. And so you have two lanes running west, two lanes running east, and then you have the train in the middle. And they have a truncated dome, which are the bumps on the road. I think they're yellow. I'm not 100% sure what color they are, but they're bumps. And when your metal cane tip hits those bumps, it makes a metal. You can hear this metallic sound, so that it allows you to hear where the bumps are, so that you know that you're coming to that spot, and then you're in the track station itself, and then that dome is on the other side, so that you know you're leaving the tracks. And sometimes the cane gets inside the little track itself. And there again, we don't send students out to manage these type of environments on the first day. We're with them. We work with them and we discuss things. Structured discovery is I think it is probably the best method of teaching. And, you can adapt to different,
environments.
Yeah, there's different. Some people say that it's structured discovery for everybody. I think you can make it for everybody. I think you have to find out the kind of person you're working with, because we work with a lot of people today that have multiple disabilities, and so there's a lot of stuff going on. I think you have to assess the situation. You can't just say, here's an address, go find it. You have to work with them. You have to go out with them, and you have to observe them. You know, blind people have been teaching blind people throughout the history of the world, how to travel. It's not rocket science, but a lot of people feel that because blind people can't see the students, that they're not as effective a teacher. And I totally disagree. There's only one place in the entire world that you can get a master's degree to teach orientation and mobility, and that's in Louisiana. All these other schools that teach it don't. It has been a long battle getting to where we are today. And if you're going to be losing your sight and blind, this is the day and age to do it. Technology is so wonderful, and blind people are teaching other blind people how to travel. It is a wonderful thing, and you can totally take care of that student. You can hear where they're at. They're adults. The people that we work with are primarily adults. We teach them good cane skills so that when they're out in traffic, they can govern themselves. I apologize if you hear any noise in the background. I can't control everything. But I wanted to just emphasize today that training is so important. You know, sometimes we underestimate the need for a trainer, and there is some skills that we have. We talked a lot this week about how to hold a cane. I try to teach best practice. I'm really a big proponent of sleep training shades or sleep shades. because if you have a little bit of residual vision, it is so hard to depend on the non-visual skill when you can see a little bit, because you're wanting to use what's familiar, even though that familiarity could potentially hurt you. It's so important to be able to depend on a consistent skill. And so I have worked with people who said they 100% refused to put on the shades. I said, well, I have something I think I can teach you. And they eventually come around and realize they can't do both. So it's such an important opportunity to use the sleep shades and learn. And I know I know there's always lots of questions. I'm not even paying attention. I don't know if anyone's got their hand raised, but cane travel for me has been such a wonderful experience. I really hope that everybody that's new here, you can get a free cane from the NFB. They provide a free cane for, they feel like everybody should have one. They certainly take donations, but you don't have to do that. Certainly get a cane. If you don't have a cane of any sort, please, I tell people, use a pool cue, whatever it takes. Have something in your hand to give you some information, because there's no reason that you should be falling down and hurting yourself. And the older we get, I'm not as old as some of you, but I don't like to fall. And I have such an odd gait when I walk, because it's, my feet don't go straight. I have to my gait is so strange that I'm constantly thinking every step I'm taking, and I don't walk normal, like heel toe. I mean, it's almost like I have flat feet. And so one little jolt, the other day I hurt my back somehow. I don't know what it did to my hip. I hurt it, but I stepped off a sidewalk that was only an inch, and it jolted me so bad. I didn't fall, but I'm constantly so worried about breaking an ankle. So there's so many things to be concerned with. And I do probably more of a constant contact, not all the time, because it slows me down, but I really appreciate this today. I'd love to talk. I'd love to answer any questions you have.
So Jerry, thank you. And before we get to the questions, which we will, and we'll allow some time for questions, and also right before we wrap up this session, I want to have a minute to wrap up today's since it's our last cane travel session. Let's talk about, if you would, catching that bus that you mentioned, and locating the bus stop and boarding, the bus and the train. And once, how would you do that? And then how would you locate a seat on the train or the bus or the plane, and those different modes of transportation and storing your cane or your dog, and, getting assistance or not, when doing those things.
That's a great, it's funny. I had meant to talk about some of that, and I totally just sidetracked myself.
That's right. Okay. That's fine. Thanks. You're good. That's,
thanks for straightening me out.
We're a team.
Yeah, that's right.
We are a team, and that's like all of our family of blind individuals. We're family, and we're all on the same team. So
I love that. Team is together. Everyone accomplishes more. So that's the great.
That's,
I love that.
Right. There's so, no the, I in team.
That's right. You got a we. No I and we either. But, it's interesting, when you find, cause that is daunting to people. Especially, finding on the plane, an airplane is actually probably one of the most simplest ones, because there's so many people there to help you. But I just ask, what's this one? Where do we start? And then I count the seats. So that's a relatively simple one, but trains and buses, they're a little more challenging. And even though they have all these special criteria places for blind people to sit, you don't always know where they are. And sometimes in Utah, people aren't as, I've stood up for half an hour before, because nobody wouldn't want to give up their seat, even though they were designated for me. And I don't always like to take that route. I can stand up with the best of them. But some people can't. So sometimes you just have to ask. But like on the train has a, when the train, there's a button on the train. And I remember when I was first learning how to get on the train, I've never dealt with a train before, and certainly not as a non-visual person. They have different, like the truncated dome on the tracks, because there's a drop off where the train comes in. And so you have to really know where that edge is on that truncated dome. And it's very important. And I reach beyond that dome because I want to know where the drop-off is. That's the most important thing to me. And it's not very wide. And there are a couple of those spots. There's a, on this train station, there's a place where you can sit. That's got like a covered area under the covered area. There's all kinds of sounds in that. They call it a track station. All kinds of little, there's like obstacles and I'm not sure they have garbage cans, but they have some monumental things in there that you just have to work around. And typically on either end of the station, they have a place where you can buy a ticket and they have these rectangle little glass things where you swipe your card on that beeps so that you're basically paying your fare. But a lot of times you have to listen. You have to listen when the train comes in because the trains are usually four cars. So you might be thinking that you're standing in the right spot because you're on the right end of the train station. But then all of a sudden the train pulls past you. And all of a sudden you're now at the back end where there's no way to get on the train. So you have to run and catch up to it. And you can listen. The doors, when the doors open, you can hear where the doors are to get on the train. I usually like to keep to an edge. Walking down the middle of a train, you have seats on both sides if you want to get to the middle. But if you get to the edge and you go forward, you have to reach your cane out, to see if people are already sitting there. And I know that that's, in the beginning, it's awkward because I don't like to inconvenience anybody. I don't like to bump into people, but the cane is a better option to hit people than yourself. And storing the cane on the train, it's so funny too. That's just like in a restaurant when you're having to pull the cane underneath your chair. I don't like to put the cane on the floor. I just don't like it. I can roll away. I don't take any chances. I look around immediately to see next to the wall if there's a place I can lean it. I typically keep it on my shoulder almost always. I don't like being without it, but it does fit right up against most sides of the train or on a bus. Sometimes the buses do face different directions, but there's definitely ways that you can find to put the cane to store it. And sometimes you have to, when you're in training, especially, and a lot of you might not get training, so you're going to have to go explore. Don't be afraid to explore and go do some work in advance because you can see where in front of the blind center, there's a place where you can sit to wait for the bus. And it's about 6 or 7 feet off the curb. And it's sitting on a curb, which is usually right where the bus comes, and you can stand and wait to get the bus. And they usually, you have to know how to advocate for yourself as well, because there's times when you just have to ask questions. Where are things? And it's a little nerve-wracking because the bus is, when it pushes that brake, it makes a hissing noise, and there's a beeping sound going on. At the same time, you're having to figure out where the step is to get on the bus. And because of COVID, they've changed a lot of things. In the beginning, they told us we couldn't get on the front of the bus anymore because you had to get on the back of the bus. And where you put your pass to get on the bus, it's usually in the front. And you just have to reach out and you feel with your cane. You can use your cane actually as a great tool to find things. I was trying to remember all your questions, see if I had.
Gary.
Well, like the stairs, you have to use your cane to even find the opening for the bus or train and then you locate the stairs, you know, initially, right?
Yes. Yeah. And sometimes and depending on the train that you get on, especially in Salt Lake, there's one step up on one of them, but then there's one that has four steps to get into that train. And that's a good identifier to know exactly which train.
We do have a question from 470. I believe that's the gentleman from Georgia.
Yes, it's Les. How you doing? From Georgia. It's not a question. It's a statement. I found a link all about canes, the different colored canes that are out. If a cane has a red tip and it has red and white stripes going up it, it represents that person is blind and also deaf. There's a couple of other things I've found that if a driver in a car cuts off a blind person, he can get a ticket for that or arrested. I haven't finished reading it. I found it this morning and it's a link and it's very interesting in how many colors that are on a cane to represent different things of a person that's using it. Thank you.
Well, it's interesting that you should say that because I've done some research myself and my contemporaries can certainly correct me if I'm mistaken. The color, that red part of the cane was just a, well, granted, I should let you know that, you know, I'm sure that you realize that if you read it on the internet, it must be true. But just facetiously, tongue in cheek because, I don't know that the red matters. A white cane, cause I can't see, but I'm pretty sure that the NFB, is following the guidelines for what cane color should be. And those are solid white canes. The handles might be different, but that red line strip that is down on a lot of folding canes, is just something they've done. I don't believe that there's any official guideline anywhere that says, please correct me if I'm mistaken, but I don't believe that. The white cane is what's really most important. The color, people can make up what they want. They can call it a rule, but I don't know that it's a law. So it's a guideline.
No, that's true. And in the NFB, we just believe in the long, straight white cane, and the white symbolize blindness, and it's most visible. We don't want to, you know, create a bunch of other colors that would distort one's ability to recognize the white cane and know that that individual is blind. You know, we certainly understand that there's other people with other disabilities. However, we're talking about the NFB canes. That's what that symbolized, and we want to acknowledge that. But, you know, I wasn't quite ready for questions. I'm not sure if you were, but I just really thought it was important that you were able to finish your thought and alert people on some of the techniques of even finding their seat once they get on. You know, there's ways of communicating. There's ways of using your cane to do these things. And I just kind of wanted to make sure that that get known. And if people have questions, just hold off just a bit and let Jerry share these thoughts, just so people can get the information that we're trying to share, if you would. We have about, 10 more minutes or so, maybe even five, but let's do that before we open up to even more questions, Jerry, so you can complete your thought and get our participants the information that they need.
Yeah, so as far as like getting to the bus, you definitely want to make sure that you know where the curb is, because between where the – and everyone is different. This bus, it has a big gap. And if your curb, you have to know where the curb is. So you use your cane to find the depth of the curb so that when you step off of it, because you might have to step off the curb to get into the bus, and then step up again to get in the bus. And so that's just going to take a lot of probing. You have to see with the, feel with the cane. I mean, definitely don't, sacrifice your arc, between so that you definitely understand exactly where you're stepping. And when you get up on that bus, once you take care of the payment aspect of it, sometimes it's really important to choke up on it, because you're in a bus. You don't know exactly, all the things that are around you, but you definitely want to keep it moving back and forth. And I keep to an edge, find an edge to stick to, because it's hard to find a seat when you're in the middle of the aisle. And then you can always ask, certainly can ask. But you so totally, as a blind person, can find an open seat, and figure out where to sit down. And you definitely can use that cane. You almost use the shaft of the cane a little bit, and you might have to reach out your arm a little bit to pull the cane back and forth up against the seat. And granted, a lot of those seats are going to be occupied. Sometimes in the front of the bus, they have special seating for disabled people. So if you want to do that, to be near the front, you can. And there's certainly ways that, like, when you can tell the bus driver where you're going. A lot of people do that. A lot of people want their independence, their autonomy. They don't want to tell anybody anything. And so you know where you're going. You know, when, if you've done your research and your homework, you know exactly how to get there. You can certainly do that. So there's multiple ways to do it. Some people are just comfortable telling the bus driver, so they have a backup plan in case they spaced it. You have to be careful too on a bus, because near the back of the bus, sometimes there's a step up, and there's also steps that go down to get off the bus. So you definitely want to make sure that you're using the cane properly to find that information.
Now, Jerry, what about on, and thanks for that. That's important, because all bus services do not have not announce their stops. So it's good that if you don't have that, you can mention that to the bus driver, or you, like you said, you can use it as a backup plan as well. What about on a plane? You know, people, is there a certain way that seats are numbered, you know, A, B, C, D, F, G, left or right? Do you find your seat on your own by counting the rows, or do you ask for assistance? What do you do?
That's a good question. It's funny because I never can remember. I know that obviously A, B, C, because I've been on airplanes. I went to Australia one time by myself, and that was a 14-hour flight, and they had three seats on either side and then three in the middle, and so it was a quite a different arrangement, and that's kind of fun to walk around that plane with that kind of time on your hands. But ABC, I don't know. I know ABC, I think, is on your right, and DEF's on your left, but sometimes you're on these smaller planes, they only have two. But
A and B and C and D. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
You're right. It is from right to left, which normally, you know, we would think, we read left or right, but it's just the opposite. And, it will tell you which row you're in with those, designated, letters, for your seat. But if you're not comfortable with that, certainly you can just ask for assistance. You know, I was always taught that a closed mouth don't get fed, and it's based on your level of comfort that you're independent. If you're not sure and not that comfortable, then by all means ask. And even when you're out traveling and on a bus, on a train, on a plane, you can ask. You can ask for assistance if you need it. There's no shame in that. It's great to be as independent as you want to be or as you can be, but if you're not certain, you know, you can say, is there an open seat here? Or excuse me, most people are not going to get upset with you tapping them with their cane, as long as you're not using your hands to feel for an open seat and inadvertently feel on an individual. That's just not good. So we teach at all of our NFB centers how to use public transportation and effectively using your cane to do that. I know in Colorado, a great public transportation system. I've used a train there. And here in Atlanta, where I'm at now and have my business, there's a great train system here, the MARTA. And there's no step up here on this train. It's just a smooth, even walk-in level entrance. But other places, like you said, in Utah and in Colorado, they have trains. But for sure, these skills that we're sharing with you are transferable. You can use these skills anywhere you go, anywhere you travel. It's just being aware, being conscious, and always using great cane technique to find the entrance, find the stairs, find the seat, and verbally communicating if that's difficult for you otherwise.
Yeah, one thing I wanted to mention, Wayne, too, is on a plane, I used to like the aisle seat. And I know a lot of people say that, well, I use a folding cane when I get on an airplane because I can put it away, which is certainly a good plan. I actually have two canes on the plane. I really like the straight cane. I just can't. Ever since I've turned to it, over 12 years ago, I just love it. I actually don't like the folding cane anymore. I have a folding cane in my backpack always. I always have one with me as a backup, but I like to sit next to the window now because I can control my cane. I can put that cane between the bulkhead of the side, right between the arm of the chair, and it slides, it fits perfectly right there, and I'm in control of it. But when I sit on the aisle, I have to ask somebody, and it's kind of, you know, it's not a bad thing, but I really like that. And then if I'm sitting on the aisle and I do that, I have the folding cane in right in the pocket in front of me in case I need it to go to the bathroom or something. So it's just good to have a plan to do some forethought of that kind of planning in advance. And on a plane, too, you have to think about the bulkheads that are above you, or not the bulkheads, the storage. And so sometimes I do find myself reaching up just to make sure that I'm not going to hit my head. And it's a smaller space, so you have to really take note.
You do have a question if you guys are ready for those yet.
That's
up to Wayne or you.
Yeah, no, I think that's good. So let's have questions. And also, again, I want to stop a little short before we go over to the next session to wrap this up. But, and also, everyone, please know that we will have the opportunity to answer questions again. We have a session between 2 and 3, and then tomorrow's wrap up. Okay, so question.
303, you have been asked to unmute. Press *6 on your phone. If you're not sure, try it again. Okay. While we're waiting
Colorado
for them to figure it out, we will go to Mr. Bill. He's unmuted.
Good morning, gentlemen. Maybe a curveball question, but I'm currently in a cast on my foot. Any Any tips for using the long white cane when on crutches or in a wheelchair? I went to an appointment to get an x-ray after I had my cast on, and we were discussing people feeling naked without their cane. I had left my cane in the car because someone was pushing me in my chair, and it was very uncomfortable because no one knew I was a blind person in the wheelchair. So, but anyway, any tips? Thank you.
Let me make sure I wasn't muted. You know, it's interesting because assuming that you have stability in your other foot, if there's so many variables to play in, they're definitely, you can definitely do it. Crutches, I've done it before, and it's a very challenging thing. Walkers, people want to, all the time, they want to use a cane while they're walker. Some people I've seen them Velcro the cane to the front of the walker, and I'm not sure that's necessarily the best idea, but, really, it's, if you don't have, like, if you're in a wheelchair, I would definitely have some type of cane to identify yourself. As Wayne mentioned earlier, advocate too, you know, let people know what's going on. You have to decide. Obviously, you're in a cast, so, limited movement is probably something that you're going to want to, you want to heal first. I was a runner for a long time, and I remember I was in a boot for 3 weeks, and I just could not stand it. Now, the boot did give me a lot of support, so hopefully your cast is giving you the support you need, but you definitely have to decide, like, you might have to use a support cane in one hand to give you some better balance, but definitely keep using that cane in your dominant hand so that you can navigate your world when you're in motion. I know there's...
Winford. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead, Winford.
About using your cane in a wheelchair, I've actually worked with a student that was in a wheelchair, and actually one of the techniques that I used in wheelchair basketball, they'll dribble the ball, put it on their lap, and they'll do two pushes with the wheel and then start dribbling again. So I took that idea, and you take two easy pushes on the wheel. You have to hold your cane, say, between your thumb and index finger, and using your other three fingers and the heel of your hand, roll the wheelchair, and then two wide sweeps left and right, two strokes, two wide sweeps left and right, and that's how you can maneuver in the wheelchair. So we've done that before. So that's one of the ideas that, mm-hmm. that I've used.
And I'm not sure if you have a power chair or manual chair, but I did have a colleague at the Colorado Center for the Blind who used a power chair wheelchair, and she was able to navigate the chair with one hand and have the cane out in front of her with the other. And also, I've worked with seniors who have a walker. Now, even an individual on crutches. So even though it's quite an arduous task, it can be done. It's quite difficult because you're gonna have to use your cane to sweep your area, and then use your chair to move, or your crutches to move forward, then sweep and move and sweep and move. If you could put some weight on it and could use a support cane, you would have a little more mobility and could move a little faster, because it's a matter of sweeping, stepping with the other cane, sweeping with your long straight cane, and then stepping with your support cane. And I've worked with many people with that. And so that's the easiest, but I'm not sure if you can put that kind of weight on it. But a power chair, if available, would be a lot easier also. So hope that answered your question.
Caller, or the 303 never did unmute, so I did put their hand down. If they want to try again, I'm more than willing to try. But as of right now, you have no questions.
Okay.
I wanted to see if I could address something. A gentleman yesterday mentioned how he has had his cane broken a time or two, I guess, in a revolving door. And mm-hmm. one of the things that when I teach people to use the revolving door, for most of the part, you can hear as the door is basically rotating from the left to the right. So I have my students approach the door from the left-hand side, and as they put your cane out, as that door comes off the wall and starts making the rotation, it will hit the tip of your cane. So you're going to let it hit the tip of your cane. As soon as you feel that, then you move your cane, put it directly behind the door, step in, and just walk around following the the door with your cane and then step out on the other side. That's kind of how I teach them to use the revolving door.
I love the revolving door. I know that some people, they avoid them and stay away from them, but I think they're fine. You know, I don't see them very often. I mean, they took the one out that we had in our agency. They just made it an automatic door, but those are great tips there. And sometimes I also will, I know that the, and granted, you don't always, as much as we try to prepare you for every situation, we just don't know. You might not know that there's even a revolving door there. So it's so good to have good cane technique. And sometimes I'll take my cane and I'll make it straight up and down, and I'll reach my arm out and give an arc back and forth to see what's available. Because sometimes having it in front of me down lower to the ground sometimes doesn't give me as much information. So you have to adapt to your environment, especially when you get into closed quarters. But the revolving door is a fun, as you get closer to it and you can hear it, certainly not a problem to reach your hand out too. You know, don't just rely only on your cane, as much as the cane is important. I love revolving doors. I think they're fun. I love escalators. escalators, and I know a lot of people are afraid of escalators. The biggest thing about the escalator is knowing it's coming. I mean, if you have balance issues, then hopefully you've resolved some of them before you get on an escalator, but you don't really hold on to an escalator. I mean, you kind of really have to have balance. But once you know that it's coming, you hear the metal tip. Most escalators have a metal plate before you get to the stairs that go down or up. And it's just a balance issue to me. I mean, I've had people I've worked with that were so afraid of them. I've actually even walked, I think it's the funnest thing to walk down them or walk up them. I think that's great. Although you get to be walking pretty fast and you get somebody in front of you. But it can be fun. So don't be afraid of it. You know, and if there are things that in travel or any other aspect that you're afraid of, that's what you need the most work with. And if you need somebody, you know, reach, advocate, call out to people, ask some people that might have some more knowledge than you, to help you with it. Cause that you don't want to be afraid, especially when we're trying to put it to, you know, you want to be as educated as you can and get as much experience as you can. And it is going to take trial and error, especially with cane travel and some people that on this call that may not have done it before or got a lot of training, we can certainly help you with that and get you in touch with people that can give you some direction to help you with it. Because travel, when you can get from point A to point B, there is just no better feeling inside. I mean, you can't produce a better smile in your mind when you can get somewhere safely.
Mm-hmm. So, Jerry, I agree with you.
Go ahead, Wayne.
With the escalator, however, I believe that you can use the railing as support on the escalator. And in fact, I instructed my students to find that railing and to use it, to also use your cane. So when you find that metal plate that's in front of the escalators and you swing your cane left to right to find your perimeters on your left and right, and then you can also find where that escalator begin. And so once you find that, you can find that rubberized handle, if you will, to hold on and to go down. And that will help you stay balanced and keep your balance. And then one thing when, that I believe that's a consistent trait with escalators, they start to level out right at the bottom. And you keep your cane and the pencil grip on a 45 degree angle, you'll feel the plate at the bottom and you'll feel where that step meet the plate. And then I just keep it out in front of me about two steps or at least one for sure, not on the step that I'm on, one or two down in front of me, and it will connect with that bottom and you'll feel that transition. And then you can, when you catch up with your cane, you can step out onto that plate and the handle that you hold on will start to level out too, right at that end. You'll feel that curve. So
something else that I do when I'm doing the escalator is like, when I'm going down, I may put my left foot just with the ball of the foot hanging over that step, and the same what you're talking about, the way your cane is out in front of you on that step in front of you. But as soon as it starts leveling out, when the ball of your foot hits that flat spot, then you just take a step out and you know, you're on your way. And then one thing I was going to mention about the buses, a lot of times, well, you can, as you're approaching the door, you can hear the blinker clicking, so that'll help you locate where the door is. And sometimes you get on the bus and the drivers would tell you, well, there's some seats on your left or right. What I typically will recommend my students is I'll say, when you ask them, if you ask where a seat or they tell you, then you clarify it by saying, is it on the driver's side or the passenger side? Because then you know for sure, because it's kind of, you're facing opposite of each other. So if they say left and you start going left and it means right, you know. So I usually have them say passenger or driver's side of the car, of the bus.
That's really good information. And as much as we want to blame other people for their mistakes, when I'm walking with my wife, I have my cane. I'm using it just like I would if I wasn't with her. It is not her fault if I hit a pole. No matter what we want to say, it is our, we're in motion. We are moving. It is not the other person's fault. And if you step off a curb or something and you don't have a cane in your hand, you do get what you deserve. It's hard to put your trust in someone else. I've tried walking with my wife around the block just for fun without a cane, and notoriously something happens. I just can't handle it. I just feel so naked without my cane. And so don't blame people for trying to help you.
We shouldn't expect our sighted guide or, you know, even blind guide for that matter to be able to, see everything, you know, to guide us and look out, you know, look back and look out for us. You know, we should be, always have our cane and always doing our part to be independent, even with a sighted guide.
Go ahead.
You have a question from a 612, and they are unmuted.
Hello, it's Judy Sanders. I want to talk about bus drivers and say that we are in charge. You know, it is true in most cities, I believe, that the front seats are reserved for seniors and or people with disabilities if they want them. I, for one, I'm both now, senior and blind, but I've never wanted those seats because what I have learned is that the middle of the bus or the first seats that face forward are the best, because I've noticed that buses tend to attract people who can't drive their own cars, and sometimes the reason they can't drive their own cars is they've had a little bit too much to drink. And those people often want to sit in the very front seats because they can't get much further. And or they want to sit in the very back so they can be rowdy. So that's why I like the middle. But remember that we are in charge, whatever we choose, there's no right or wrong to it. Whatever we choose should be our decision, and I don't take that, even if a bus driver pretty much wants me to sit there, that's going to make me move on for sure.
Yeah, thanks for those comments, and I know, Wayne, it's getting close. There's one thing that just came to mind that I really wanted to try to wrap up here in 1 minute is, and I have a really hard time with this. I'm a professional. There's almost never a time in my life that I'm allowed to be me because I'm constantly representing the state and everything like that. But I'm a human first, and I do find sometimes that when people offer me help, they're the 50th person today to say, do you need my help? And I sometimes I get a little short with them. But people really do mean well. I give this advice to myself as much as anybody else. People do mean well. I don't believe they're trying to take away my independence because they want to just help me. And how many times have we been in this experience where someone says, hi, do you need some help? I'm in an airport. They run me down. Do you need some help? Nope, I know exactly what I'm doing. They walk away. I turn around, bam, right into a pole because my totally got total frustration. I wasn't paying attention. I did, but that's my fault. And then those people behind me say, see, you needed my help. It's like, no, I didn't need your help. I just needed to be more concentrating on my own work. But it happens. But they're just trying to be helpful. And as much as we can try to be, thank you, no, I got it. For the 50th time, yes, I can do it. I can fall into a hole just fine without your help. Just wanted to make that point.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true. And I think there's truly a way to accept help and tell people the type of help that you need. And there's certainly a way to respectfully decline help. And I don't think we should do it very angrily. I think we should be nice because, you know,
a lot of people don't interact with blind people, and sometimes we're the first. And I just think that the opinion of us as blind people that we leave an individual with could reflect on others as well. So
yeah, well, they judge us. One person gets everything.
You have another question from Cynthia?
Okay, so we'll take this last question and then we'll wrap up.
I know when I was in blind school, they were teaching me of the escalator, and I had never even thought of this. And she told me, she says, it will always, the railing on the side always goes forward, so don't assume you're going down. It may be going up. And she taught me to stick my cane out into to where it would get to the step and let it drop off. And if it, let's see if I can get this right. If it's going up, you'll hear it go thunk, thunk, because it's dropping off of each one. And if it's going down, it'll pull it a little bit. Does that make sense? I don't know if I got it right or not, but
it'll come back to you. If it's going down, your cane will be back in your lap. Sometimes I would get on that thinking I was going down, and I walked halfway up an escalator before I realized it was going the wrong direction. Who hasn't ever done that?
And she is right. That always go forward. Mm-hmm. The railing. If your hands on it, it's always going forward.
The escalator also, if you have your hand on the railing, it will go down. If the stairs are going down, it'll slant down. And then if the stairs are going up, it'll slant the opposite way. It'll go
upward.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And that's true. And that's great of you to point that out. And real quick, someone just texted me a question. They said, how can you locate bus stop pole, you know, the signage for a bus stop? They said there's several poles and on the stop. If there's no bench, you know, to indicate that as well. And my answer is, it could vary in different places, but most bus stops, the signage is like a flag. It sticks out on one side from the pole. So it'll go out toward the street, toward the road, and it's only on one side of that pole.
They have little holes in them as well. Sometimes they got a little squirvy little feel too. So it depends on where you're at, because they make the poles different. So they do have different poles.
The poles could be different designs.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I just wanted to thank our seniors division and Ruth for giving all of us the opportunity to share with all of you the knowledge and information that we have, and it's a great honor to have that opportunity to share with all of you to help in whichever way we can. I hope that the information that we've shared has been very helpful. I'm Wayne Marshall, and I have my company, Independence Training Services, ITS. It's for you in Atlanta, Georgia. And I've been fortunate enough to be joined by Winford Haynes in Austin, Texas. Thank you, Winford. And Robert Wilkerson in New Mexico. Thank you for assisting this week. And Duncan Larson in Colorado at the Colorado Center. We appreciate her assistance in teaching yesterday. And Jerry Neely in Utah. Thank you again. And we will make our information available to you all to some degree. If you have other questions that has not or been answered, we can certainly try to help you if we can. Those of who are willing to share their information, we will make that available in the resource guide that will be available at the end of this training. So again, thank you all for joining us on the orientation mobility cane travel portion of the training retreat for 2020, our seniors retreat for 2020. Thank you.